You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I'm friends with the monster that's under my bed. Get along with the voices inside of my head. You're trying to save me, stop holding your breath. And you think I'm crazy, yeah, you think I'm crazy.
I wanted to fame, but not the cover of Newsweek. Oh well, guess beggars can't be choosy. Wanted to receive attention from my music. Wanted to be left alone in public, excuse me. So wanting my cake and eat it too. Wanting it both ways, fame made me a balloon. Cause my ego inflated when I blew sleep. It was confusing, cause all I wanted to do was be the Bruce Lee of Bruce Lee, abuse ink. Use it as a tool when I blew steam. Hit the lottery, ooh wee. But with what I gave up to get was bittersweet. It was like winning, and use me. I'm blind cause I think I'm getting so huge. I need a shrink, I'm beginning to lose sleep. One sheep, two sheep, going cuckoo and kooky is cool key. But I'm actually weirder than you think. Cause
I'm friends with the monster.
Very good Monday morning to you. Mike McMarion for Monday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. Big Monday for my family. One of my sons comes home from deployment, so fired up about that. So it's kind of... you get his truck ready, all that. So, it's first deployment, so be interested to hear what he has to say, his view of the world. But I have to tell you that they lost 3 Marines during the deployment in an Osprey crash. So I wound up thinking about them a little bit over the weekend. This thing that, you take for granted. They go, they come back. There's 3 families that will see that news and will cry about it. Because this should have been the day when their family should have been back together again, but they're not. So we'll keep them in our thoughts and prayers as we did honor them during Marine Corps celebrations they've been going on for a while now, but officially on Friday. So just for those of you who missed Friday, happy belated birthday to you. And let me tell you what we're going to do on the program today. Barney Barnum was on last week. And I got a whole series of... requests. Hey, play him again. I said, come on. So we'll do that today. In the second hour, we'll check the news of the day. And we'll do that. And then the gunner will join us, and we'll see how Mike's weekend was. I got a couple emails to start the program. Mac, you were talking about Veterans Day specials. Do you honestly not take advantage of any of that? I don't think those Veterans Day specials are really targeted at veterans, to be honest with you. Well, I guess if you're giving away food or something like that, maybe they are, but, Veterans Day sale, not targeted for veterans, targeted for everybody else. What am I going to do, roll around town looking for food on sale or a mattress or something like that? I don't think most veterans, do that. I mean, I'm sure some do, but I think it's more out of coincidence or they're going to go out. when somebody says, hey, let's go to so-and-so, there you have five for one. All right, let's go. Got your ID? But I don't think most take advantage of it. I had an interesting conversation with neighbors, all veterans. So I go out to my garage and I put up the garage door yesterday, and I was cleaning up in the house or something. And Colleen and I we were messing around cleaning up and stuff. So I open the garage door, and here across the street are all the neighborhood geniuses in one spot. I went, whoa. And they looked at me, and I said, aren't that many important people not supposed to be in one spot at one time? So they all either flipped me the bird or said something profane to me. I said, whoa, 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 boys, what's up with that? And so I walked over. Very interesting conversation, though. Specifically, their opinion of the senior Bush, who I thought was, they did not care for him. Yeah. Did not care for him as a president. Which surprised me a little bit. And so I've got a little research I got to do. That's right. Pretty disturbing story about the SEALs that is in the media right now. We'll talk about that this morning as we talk about headlines. But I have to tell you that we first saw that story almost 2 weeks ago when the announcement about the investigation hit. And I have to tell you, well, we'll talk about it, but wow. So we'll talk about the news headlines today on a Monday, the 13th day of November, as we get about midway through the month. President wrapping up his tour in the Pacific Rim. You know, and I will tell you this. I mean, I don't know that he should get high marks for the tour. But the one thing that his foreign events are not, he's much more deliberate in his foreign events than he is in than his domestic events. Pretty deliberate. Doesn't seem to be stepping in it a whole lot. And he's an interesting contrast when he deals with foreign people, as opposed to when the wrecking ball gets moving. Relative to when he's here domestically. So I find it interesting how different he can be. The United States Marine Corps band makes it official this morning. Hope you had a good weekend. Good morning to you. And on the backside of Veterans Day, the Marine Corps birthday.
Can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
As we get going here on a Monday, cloudy and 44 degrees as we transition from fall to winter. That's in Quantico. Cloudy and raining at Camp Lejeune, 50 degrees. Camp Lejeune, excuse me, General. Pretty mild in Texas. Clouds at 58, sunny and 38 in Big Timber, Montana. Although Montana man spent the weekend in Idaho. Yeah. Shoeing horses. Mostly sunny in 55 to 29 Palms. Cold at Camp Pendleton. Clouds in 47. Okinawa. Cloudy dark 74. Raqqa. Clear dark in 67. Marja. Cold. Clear dark in 62. Currently 52 degrees under cloudy skies. In the Newport Beach, Costa Mesa area, Southern California. Looking for a high of 71 today. So we'll look forward to that. News is next. Don't touch that dial. All Marine Radio continues.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com. And I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world-famous Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, BattleMug.com.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the SOF community should be aware of.
The Global SOF Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. You know, one of the big discussions I had with my veteran buddies here on my block, impromptu, is does the truth even matter anymore in our country? They were far more caustic than I was about it. They said not only no, but hell no. That the only thing that matters is if you're in charge, punishing the other party and playing this game of chicken that gets played in Washington, D.C. Everything else is secondary to that. The truth, come on. What are you, a choir boy? What are you, stupid? You believe in the truth? I was like, damn, boys. They're like, come on, Mac. Why are you bothering us with stupid stuff this morning? Of course the truth doesn't matter. It never matters in Washington, D.C. The only thing that matters is power. Sustaining it at all costs. Getting it if you're out of it. That's what matters. Okay. All right. I've always respected my elders. So, yeah. What are you going to say when they drop the hammer on you? Did you know that November is now Veterans Month? Yeah. Not just a day. Yeah, boom, boys and girls, a month. Yeah, son. Headlines from Marine headlines around the world, right? Most of them come from Marine Corps time, but drill instructor gets 10 years behind bars for hazing. And this is an interesting headline, right? Here's the headline. Marine who pissed on dead Taliban wins in court. That's kind of an interesting headline, isn't it? Do they not think urinated was good enough? Also, another headline, interesting. Marines bring HIMARS to Helmand to beef up security. Yeah, reach out and touch somebody. The president offered another headline. The president offered to mediate in the South China Sea. Guy in the Philippines said, yeah, probably not. An opinion piece talks about, this is a commentary piece, Bergdahl outcome demonstrates integrity of our military justice. Okay. And then the AFRICOM investigation team visits the Niger ambush site. So that gets going. First of all, Gunnery Sergeant Felix, will spend 10 years in prison after a court-martial sentenced him on Friday for abusing recruits at Paris Island, one of whom jumped over a stairwell and fell to his death after Felix slapped him. Felix was also reduced in rank to E1, forfeited all pay and allowance, and will ultimately receive a dishonorable discharge. He was taken into custody on Friday, initially held in the brig at Camp Lejeune. On Thursday, he was found guilty of maltreatment, violation of a lawful general order, dereliction of duty, making false official statement, and drunken disorderly conduct. He was acquitted of obstruction of justice and one specification of a violation of a general order. Originally an air traffic controller, he is a veteran of both Iraq and Afghanistan. Before being sentenced, Felix asked jurors for leniency, saying he was devoted to his wife and family. I am a shattered man as I stand before you. The girls in my life are the only things that are keeping the pieces together. You know what? One of the things that you hear about Paris Island and the effect that that campaign cover has on, and you hear this from grunts, that non-grunts, here's an air traffic controller, are more affected by it than grunts. Kind of an interesting little comment. So when you get into these discussions with other Marines, one of the things you'll hear is, hey, the people that really lose their mind are guys who come from non-combat arms MOS. This is their chance to prove themselves in some way, shape, or form. So the most high-profile so far, the most high-profile case ends for the Marine Corps. I'm sure it will be appealed. But now, you know, again, there's a young recruit that was dead. Now, this gunnery sergeant, now a private, his family, you know, his wife will now support their family. He now gets paid the pay of a private, which is not zero, but it certainly isn't that of a gunnery sergeant. So, you know, sad. The next headline, and this is, again, this is a headline. Marine who pissed on dead Taliban wins in court. A military court has dismissed charges against a former Marine scout sniper who pleaded guilty to urinating on Taliban corpses, finding that former Commandant General James Amos had illegally interfered with the legal process at the outset. Staff Sergeant Joseph W. Chamberlain was reduced in rank to sergeant, ordered to pay $500 after he pled guilty to charges stemming from a 2011 incident in Afghanistan, which became a national sensation after video of Marines urinating on the bodies was put. So they used urinating on the bodies in the body, and they used piss in the headline. Interesting. Was posted on YouTube in January 2012. But neither Chamberlain nor his defense attorneys knew at the time that General Amos had replaced Lieutenant General Thomas Waldhauser as the first convening authority in the case after telling Waldhauser that he wanted the Marines involved with the urination incident to be crushed and discharged, the Navy Marine Corps Court of Appeals found on Wednesday. This is an unusually flagrant example of UCI, unlawful command influence, the court ruled. We find that the UCA was that UCI this direct and occurring at this level is highly corrosive to public trust in this proceedings. In an affidavit to the court, Waldhauser wrote that Amos asked him why he did not feel the accused Marine should be sent to a general court-martial, which is reserved for the most serious offenses. When Waldhauser said he did not believe the cases warranted a general court-martial, Amos said he could appoint a new convening authority. Amos later admitted that he had crossed the line and told Waldhauser that he was being replaced as convening authority to avoid the appearance of interfering in the case, Waldhauser wrote. But appointing a new general officer to be in charge of the case did not solve the problem, the court found. For example, Corps officials argued that they did not tell Chamberlain's defense attorneys about Amos's comments to Waldhauser to avoid exposing all involved in the trial to Amos's act of unlawful influence. Quote, the appellant had a right to discovery and a right to judicial process free of UCI. An accused does not forfeit his right to discovery because the government's preferred UCI remedy requires it. Some of Amos's other actions undermine the general public's confidence in the proceedings, independence, and impartiality, as well as holding a briefing that included pictures of the Marines urinating on Taliban corpses, along with the words, "What does America think of her Marines today?" the court found. the court agreed with Chamberlain's defense that an impartial observer would believe that Amos and the Corps' attorneys severely and systemically interfered with the legal proceedings, the ruling says. And one of the byproducts of this is a federal judge ordered the Pentagon to release secret files on the former commandant. Here's what they say. So they unsealed the Amos investigation. Retired Marine Lieutenant Colonel James Wirick, who filed a series of complaints in 2013 arguing that Amos acting improperly in the Scout Sniper case, is called the court's ruling historic. The fact that Amos and other Corps officials were found to have violated a Marine's due process rights shows that it is time to update the military judicial system, possibly putting the Justice Department in charge of prosecuting military cases, Wirick told Marine Corps Times on Thursday. It's hard to imagine underplaying the significance of this. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Again, you know, the Justice Department handling these cases has long been called for, in particular by sexual assault advocates, saying that commanders are in no way, shape, or form equipped and are often way too lenient on perpetrators. Some of the rulings are ridiculous, by the way. All right. HIMARS are essentially missiles launched out of a pod, and they go a long distance. They go really high, and they go really far. Yeah. We routinely had fired those both in Iraq and Afghanistan. They were removed from Iraq and Afghanistan, and now they're returning. They've already returned to Iraq. Now they're returning to Afghanistan. The M142 High Mobility Artillery Rocket System, otherwise known as HIMARS, Task Force Southwest operates in a number of outposts in the Helmand province where Marines historically have been. Quote, Task Force Southwest has both direct and indirect fire assets available to assist our Afghan partners, the 215th Corps and the 505th Zone, as well as to protect Marines and sailors, says Major Kendra Motz, a spokesman for Task Force Southwest, commanded by Colonel Roger Turner. I'm sorry, Brigadier General Roger Turner, who said he was going to come on All Marine Radio and then slipped out of the country. Yeah. So we have that going for us. The Amos investigation stuff, pretty interesting stuff, though, because recently that came up when General Eric Smith, Major General type, was talking about he wanted to be done with hazing in the 1st Marine Division. And, you know, and from that came raised eyebrows in terms of some of the things he said. He wanted all hazing cases referred to him. And so, he felt like he had been disrespected. Respected by Lance Corporals, who just turned around and gave him the finger after he said, as a division, we won't do this anymore. And so, anyway, this decision, you know, still looms large over the Marine Corps. That case still looms large over the Marine Corps. Stupid. Absolutely, positively stupid. And you know, the thing that about that incident, the whole urination incident, is look, It's not like those were Lance corporals doing that stuff. They weren't. There were staff NCOs there. There was officers there. Yeah. Videotape it and then put it up on YouTube. How about that? Send it around a little bit to our friends. Somebody post. Come on. But, you know, I can fix a lot of things. I can't fix stupid. All right, we'll go to the early bird. We'll go to the top five. And this is in a story that is absolutely positively stunning. The number one story in the early bird is this security breach and spilled secrets have shaken the national the NSA to its core. Current and former agency officials say shadow brokers' disclosures, which began in August of 2016, have been catastrophic for the NSA, calling into question its ability to protect potent cyber weapons and its very value to national security. The agency, regarded as the world's leader in breaking into adversaries' computer network, failed to protect its own. And if you haven't followed the story, it's been amazing as the tools that they have used have been put on the internet. Yeah. It's been amazing. And so that's the top story. Which, you know, I find that kind of interesting. The number two story is the story that is has been really the story that is, I think, rocked a lot of people, and that is that Green Berets now, I saw this in the Daily Beast. It's also in, where else did I see it? I think CNN ran something on it, Fox ran something. So it's interesting when you see a story. It wasn't initially widely reported. when you see it begin to pick up traction, you start looking at who's writing about it. You start looking at who's writing about it. And so the article references the Daily Beast is the original publisher of the story, and it's a terrible story about American Special Forces working in Africa. Army Staff Sergeant by the name of Logan Melger. The story keeps getting worse and worse and worse. He evidently communicated to his wife that he was having problems with some bad actors that he was working with that were United States Navy SEALs. And evidently he had told her that they were stealing money, I guess, out of a fund set up for paying sources. He was then strangled. The SEALs reported that they were grappling and doing hand-to-hand stuff, blah, 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 blah. The only problem is he doesn't drink. And it's hard to believe they would say that, because that's something clearly that you can test for. Shortly before he died, Melger told his wife that he had a bad feeling about two of his partners in the effort, both of whom were members of SEAL Team 6. Not wanting to say much more, Melger informed his wife, Michelle, that he'd tell her the full story when he got back home. According to official speaking on a condition of anonymity, because the investigation is still ongoing. Now the two Navy SEALs are under investigation for killing him. The count is based on five members of the Special Operations Community. In fact, this account, so the article is based on five members of the Special Operations Community who are not cleared to speak. AFRICOM, SOCOM, Special Operations Command, and NCIS all declined to discuss the investigation. Minimal U.S. troop present in Mali. Special Operations Forces aid U.S. diplomats, Malian soldiers, and French partners in gathering intelligence on a confluence of capable local militias that trend towards being Islamist. As elite troops do in many countries, they operate in the shadows with comparative little oversight. And what their actions actually look like on the ground can be much dirtier than the heroic image the Pentagon prefers to portray. For example, part of the intelligence gathering operation in Mali involved funds used to pay informants. Melger, two special operations sources say, discovered that SEALs were pocketing some of the money from the informant fund. The SEALs offered to cut him in. He declined. And then an altercation began on June 4th. The altercation escalated. He lost consciousness, stopped breathing. He died by asphyxiation. The SEALs told superiors that he was drunk during so-called combatives, which is hand-to-hand fighting exercise. No drugs were found or alcohol were found in Melger's system. A second Africa command official said Brigadier General Donald Bolduc, then commander of Special Operations Command Africa, was skeptical of the initial reports from the onset. He alerted Army CID and told commanders in Mali to preserve all the evidence. Melger's wife, Michelle, was also suspicious. Three sources tell the Daily Beast she raised concerns about the cause of the death and allegations of drinking. According to three people familiar with the investigation, including providing investigators emails sent home by her husband about problems he was having with the SEALs. You know, this is just my experience with these kind of incidents. They didn't learn this behavior in Mali. They didn't learn this behavior in Mali. I honestly believe the SEALs have a problem. I believe there's a reason why you constantly see these things in the SEAL community and not in the Delta Force. And there's cancer in the SEAL community. So anyway, it's an awful article, and it's very prominent today, and I don't know what else to say other than it's pathetic. U.S. Air Force officials confirm rumors that the United States is in talks with the United Arab Emirates about a potential sale of F-35 Joint Strike Fighters, the Air Force number 2 general said on Friday. The other article that has been widely seen on the news is tens of thousands of Europe's far-right march in Poland. So Poland over the weekend celebrated its 99th Independence Day. Yet the images that come out of it are of a far right movement that writers would tell you reminiscent of National Socialism in Germany, anti-immigrant. But I would tell you this. And I'd be curious to know if people think that this makes me sound like a racist. If I'm a Pole and And I've grown up with Polish culture. And somebody in our government decides somebody in your government decides all of a sudden that the nation is going to allow, let's just say for the sake of discussion, unfettered immigration. And your country is now challenged about being Polish. That the people coming to your country are from the Middle East. They don't share Polish customs. They don't particularly care about them. All they want is a place to live. Is it wrong to look and say, what are we doing? You know, we're not the United States. We're not a melting pot. We're Poland. We're Poles. And historically, we've always managed immigration closely. And with the majority of our immigration coming from other European countries that held similar values to ours. That is not the case now. And we feel threatened. We feel threatened culturally. And we see this contest between Western values, Western Judeo-Christian values, and Middle Eastern Islamic values, and we're not good with it. Is that okay to say that? Or does that make you a racist? But nope, you're a racist, can't do it. So, and then in the reporting of it, I would ask you, so what do you think forms the larger number? What do you think forms the larger number in that protest? National socialist types or people concerned about the immigration policy of their nation and the future of their nation? And when you get numbers up that big, you are not talking about fringe anymore. You're talking about a legitimate concern of a lot of people. So what is it? But again, the way it gets reported, and so does that make me a racist? Does that make me a racist? Maybe. The pictures coming out of that, by the way, are pretty amazing. And then the headline is formed by, I guess, one of the signs. The protest, and again, what you have is people carrying the Polish flag. For blocks and blocks beyond the central towers of Warsaw, a much larger crowd swelled beneath a cloud of red smoke. The tens of thousands of people came from across Poland and beyond, and reporters documented their signs. Clean blood, as seen by Politico. Pray for an Islamic Holocaust, per CNN. White Europe was across. So you have 60,000 people, and you pull out those three. That's what I don't like about the American media. And so which of those inflammatory signs becomes a headline? Pray for an Islamic Holocaust. All right. And you see this all over Europe. In Poland in particular, in 2015, the Conservative Law and Justice Party took power in Poland, fueled by, in part, anti-immigration politics that helped put other right-wing parties in power throughout much of Europe. So is there not a legitimate argument that they have that look, there's a huge war going on in the Middle East. The United States had two of its largest buildings dropped on live TV not that long ago. There are acts of terrorism around the world. Yet journalists want to act like this is no that this is not a threat, that this is not something serious. It's not the way Europe certainly is reacting. Just interesting the way, in my opinion, just the lack of balance of the article. That's why you listen. All right. Another pretty interesting story. UAE minister, Iran is a greater threat than Al-Qaeda or ISIS. This is from Dubai, UAE. A top Emirati official warned a high-powered gathering of U.S. government, military, and business leaders on Sunday that Iranian-sponsored terror, while similar to Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State group, has greater potential for impacting negatively on the region and the world. At a dinner event in Dubai in support of ever-strengthening ties between Washington and Abu Dhabi, Mohammed bin Ahmad al-Barwadi, the UAE Minister of State for Defense Affairs, said his country is proud of the joint accomplishments in combating terror and extremism of the two Sunni groups, yet urged closer collaboration in confronting Shiite Iran and its proxies in Lebanon and Yemen. Over the years, we have collaborated jointly on the war on terror against Al-Qaeda and ISIS. Yet more collaborative work remains to be accomplished in the future to abolish all forms of terror and extremism. I must stress that much work must be done to confront extremist Iranian threats to world peace and security with their surrogates in the region, Hezbollah and the Houthis in Yemen. So it seems to me that nations in the region are taking a much more public and vocal stance relative to Iran. Things you would never heard years ago, you hear now. We already touched on the president of the Philippines said that the South China Sea dispute is better left untouched after the president offered to mediate. And another interesting story that again late last week, waiting for additional information. But evidently this plot that has Mike Flynn and his son meeting with Turkish officials, right, going to be paid millions of dollars if they kidnap this cleric that Turkey says is helping to destabilize their nation. Mass graves found in Iraq. And then one more story I want to talk about real quick. And then we'll take a break and you'll hear Barney Barnum. The big air show in Dubai, by the way. A couple emails we'll get to here. The North Korean defector. Shot and wounded, defected to the South. I don't need to tell you who shot him and wounded him. The soldier was found on the south side of the border village of Panmunjom, about 50 meters south of the military demarcation line, wounded in his shoulder and his elbow, according to South Korean Defense Ministry official. He defected from a North Korean guard post nearby and was being treated in the hospital. The defector was urgently transferred to a hospital in a helicopter of the United Nations command, and there was no exchange of fire with our side. Since it was an area exposed to the north, we had to crawl toward there to get him out, the official added. While on an average more than 1,000 North Koreans defect to South Korea every year, most travel via China, and it is unusual for a North Korean to cross the land border dividing the two Koreas. The last crossing was in June. How about that? 3, 2, heart thumping. Every step seems like it's taken like an hour to execute. Good for him. Good for him. Hope his life works out and everything is cool. Mac, pretty bad news on this Monday after Veterans Day and the Marine Corps birthday. Good God, is there anything positive? Answer that is not that I've seen. Not that I've seen. One positive thing is more, I don't know. I don't know if it was me, but pictures I saw showed a lot of empty seats in the National Football League. So I'm a fan of that. Nothing but bad news this morning. Good news is my son's coming home. So he'll be home tonight. So fired up about that. Another email. Why do you have such a low opinion of the SEALs, and why do you extol Delta Force? I've yet to hear you explain why. I find that interesting. I think the Navy's got a culture problem, but that's not why. My experience with SEALs, and it goes back a long ways. It goes back to 2006 when I worked with them almost on a nightly basis. I didn't think that they possessed the requisite experience and judgment to make some of the calls they made, and then they would make them, and you'd wind up having to kill civilians would get killed because you're now trying to get them out of something they should have never got into in the first place. And I saw that over and over and over again. And I didn't see it with other. I didn't see it with the Rangers. I didn't see it with Delta Force. I didn't see it with Australian SF guys. I didn't see it with British SF guys. So when bad things happen, it was one group. It was one group. So, again, I'm sure they have great guys as part of it, but as an organization, I'm not a fan. I've seen too many bad things. I believe one of the problems they have is you can, I think the pipeline, you go straight into SEALs. And I think it's almost like a high school kid who's a good athlete who starts getting his ass kissed when he's in middle school and you wonder why he is the way he is. Yeah, you're special from the get-go. You're not what other people are. You're different. Or I think that the path to Delta is through the United States Army. And you got to be a soldier. And I think it's a different group of professionals. So that's just my take based on my own personal experience. It's not based on things I've read. It's not based on other things. It's just things that I saw and things I experienced. And then as I bumped into other special operators, I would ask them, hey, is it me or, and they would look at me and they'd say, no, it's not you. So, and again, I'm not hating on them. I just, my own opinion, they have major issues. I mean, look, the movies they've made, you know, the books they've, those guys all, you know, cashed in on the Bin Laden thing. Well, are we not supposed to? No. It used to be swift, silent, and deadly. I guess what is it now? Swift, silent, and vocal. Swift, silent, and with our PR people. Swift, silent, and blabbing everything that we can blab. That's the SEAL. So, yeah, I will tell you what, though. The NSA, though, that second big event that happened last week, that's stunning. That's how we do the things we do, and somebody's throwing their shit in the street. Yeah, absolutely, positively stunning. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, Barney Barnum, he joined us last week, and back by popular demand, you will hear that interview. If you missed it, shame on you. Absolutely, positively shame on you, but you'll get a chance to hear it. It is, he's a great guy, and it's a great interview because he's a great interview. He says what's on his mind and very, very cool guy. And we talk current events, we talk leadership, we talk hazing, all kinds of very, very interesting stuff. So don't touch that dial. More of, Almarine Radio coming up next. Right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Yeah. Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it. This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world-famous Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled machine anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. BattleMug.com.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global Stock Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the stock community should be aware of.
The Global Stock Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marine.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used.
Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. We continue here with somebody who's knows the program, and joining us again is retired from the United States Marine Corps, Barney Barnum. So, Barney, first of all, thanks for doing this again. I appreciate it. The last time we did this, I got a bunch of email about your appearance, and people truly enjoyed the interviews. So, thanks for coming back on.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Good
to be able to get your Marines to respond back as we approach our 242nd birthday here.
Yeah. So, on this week, first of all, happy birthday.
Well, thank you.
Let's talk about the birthday. You've been affiliated with the Marine Corps for an awful long time, most of your life now. What does the Marine Corps mean to you now?
Well, the Marine Corps, that's the biggest fraternity in the world, and I'm just fortunate to be a member of it. I just, I cherish the people I served with, the people I got to lead, and the things I got to do for the country, and I think it makes me feel good. It makes me feel good to be an American, and of course the most important thing in my life, not rank or position, it's the title Marine.
Are there any birthdays that you experience as you reflect that stand out more than others do?
Oh, you know, that's hard to say. I think a couple in Vietnam stand out because, you know, we don't do much, but someone took a piece of pound cake and put a candle in it. I'm gonna be up in Naperville, Illinois for the birthday this year, and a group of Marine Corps leaguers and my radio operator, Pat Iconato, from the battle in Vietnam where I received the medal, is gonna be there, and two of my troopers from the second tour. So, I'm looking forward to that. And then, I'll fly to Boston and I'll be at the Sepify luncheon up there with 2,300 other Marines and the chairman, General Dunford's guest of honor. So, this is going to be a good birthday call.
Wow. No, that sounds like a good one. That sounds like a good one. How did you first cross paths with the chairman? And can you tell us about that? I mean, I had a chance to work with him in Iraq in 2004. And I didn't know, I had never met him. I'd never even heard of him. Who's Joe Dunford? And yeah. John Kelly looked at me and goes, "Matt, you're stupid. He's from Boston. You'll love him." And I said, "I hate people from Boston."
Well, I tell you, I first met Joe when I was attending, I always go up to Boston around the 10th of November and for the Semper Fidelis luncheon. And Joe has been there a number of times as the guest of honor, and his family's there. So I met him when, actually, first of all, when he was a young colonel, and met his dad and his brother and his mom. So then, of course, I, like everybody else, followed Colonel Joe Dunford's phenomenal leadership in Iraq. So I just followed him, and of course I got to know him well, and he and his wife Ellen. I count him as a damn good friend.
No, you know, and he is he's a wonderful, and this sounds pretty un-Marine like, but he's a wonderful human being. You talk about a guy who has time, takes time for everybody, to the point when you're working with him, you look at him, and I counseled him once. I said, you know, Colonel, he had been selected for Brigadier General, and he was the chief of staff of the division, and I was the staff sec. And I said, you know, Colonel, I think the corporation's got, you know, fairly big plans for you, but you're going nowhere if you can't learn a little time management. And he looked at me, and he laughed, and he said, Mac, he said, this is the way I've done it. This is the way I've always done it, and I'm not I'm not changing. And this is after this is the you know, we have Fallujah surrounded, Ramadi's going crazy, whatever's going on out at Al-Qaim, Husayba, and he's putting it all together because Madison Conway don't see eye to eye. He's the guy who goes behind the scenes and patches it all up on a nightly basis. And I mean, he's got a big job. And the chaplain came and said, "Sir, could I talk to you?" He sat with the chaplain for 45 minutes and spoke with him in the midst of all of this. And I
And no, so that's the way he is. And that you said something that I think I'm just doing. That is, it might sound un-Marine-ish to be that way, but I think that's the epitome of a great leader. And I heard you said you were a staff sec. I was staff sec in 2nd Division back in the 70s.
Great minds. Kelly, I was working in division plans, and Mattis's aide got wounded, and they made the staff sec the aide. And Kelly comes to me, who I'd worked for at IOC in Quantico, and he walks through the door, and I looked up, and I said, "Hey, sir, what's up?" Because Kelly's a funny guy, another Boston guy, but Kelly's got a great sense of humor. And, I always enjoyed seeing and talking to him. And I said, "What's up, sir?" And he goes, "I want to talk to you." And then I think I did something wrong. I said, "Everything okay?" He said, "Yeah, I got another job for you." I said, "What's that?" And he said, "It's staff sec for the CG here in the division."
Yeah.
And I looked at him and I said, "Sir, I don't even know what that is." And it sounds, and you know, I said, "It sounds kind of gay." He said, "Mac, look, it's a better job than this." I said, "Well, who do I work for?" He said, "Well, you work for the CG, me, and you work right next to Joe Dunford, and you'll work next to him every day." And that's when I said, "Who's Joe Dunford?" And he says, "Are you stupid?" And I said, "No, I just got here. I don't know who he is." He's the chief of staff, Mac. And so, but I'll tell you what, you talk about an interesting, to be able to sit in meetings every day, with General Mattis, General Kelly, and Colonel Dunford, and to watch the brain power, in those meetings and the weight of the issues that you were tackling. And then just the way they went about it was one of the great experiences, leadership experiences of my life. And
oh yeah, yeah.
Staff.
Well, I can understand, and I'll equate to what you just said. Let's go back in Vietnam when I'm a captain, battery commander, and I went to a couple operational planning meetings up on Firebase Dick, and when Colonel Barrel, Robert Barrel, soon to be a commandant. Had the 9th Marines, General Ray Davis, Medal of Honor, had the division, and Dick Stillwell, 3-star Stillwell, at 24th Corps. And to be in the same tent when they had sticks in their hand and were drawn in the sand about how we were going to run Operation Dewey Canyon down through the Ashall Valley, I'll never forget that.
It's like being in the midst of dinosaurs. I mean, the men you speak of are in the pantheon of heroes. In the Marine Corps, they're bigger than big.
Yeah. And they're the ones that brought us along. That's the reason we always say, you know, that's the
that's that's the thing behind the footsteps at Parris Island. When you get off the bus, you put your feet in these footsteps. These are footsteps that other Marines are going before you put their feet in. So you better stay a step with the beat of the drum. And so I've always said I try to put my feet in the footsteps of people like Barrow and Davis and Stillwell, and then I hope young guys that come behind me try to put their feet in the steps that Barnum left.
You know, sir, one of the things that I remember thinking when I first got to Iraq was, you know, you see people get killed and you contemplate your own mortality, and then quickly you see that, you know, I don't have a whole lot of control over whatever happens. The only thing I can control is what I do, how I lead, how I do my job. And that flag raising at Iwo Jima, that statue, that casts a long shadow in terms of, I think, what you feel when you go. I think the first time you're involved in a conflict and you think, you know what, I'm not going to fail the Marines that have come before me. I'm a member of that long line, and I don't know what's going to happen to me, but I can tell you what I'm not going to do. I'm not going to fail the people that depend on me. And that tradition
is huge. There's a statue and the exploits at Iwo Jima, I'm sure they still do, but when I had a battalion at Parris Island, the drill instructors talked about Iwo Jima before these guys went to sleep at night, you know. They use that as the focal point of what's expected of you when you become a Marine.
There's a whole series of current events that I want to ask you about. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
They're Marine current events. Very high profile trial going on, or court martial going on at Camp Lejeune. That deals with incidents at Parris Island. Is this simply an ongoing fight, and on occasion we stumble? Is there any trick to it? Or have we changed things and therefore we're not as good at it as we used to be? You've served down there. Your thoughts on that?
Well, it's funny. I just had a long talk with General Mick Traynor today. Mick Traynor was the assistant depot commander when I was there, and we talked about this very same thing. And I got to tell you, this stuff didn't happen on our watch. I mean, supervision is paramount. And I think when we talked last, you talked about Jarvis Lynch.
Yes.
This stuff would have never happened when Jarvis Lynch was down there, because he was always out and around and looking. This stuff didn't happen when I was there. I think it's supervision. I really do. And holding people's feet to the fire and making them follow the SOP and breaking this I'm a drill instructor, I can do anything. It's just another damn Marine with another job to do.
You know what? You're not the first person I've heard say that, but there is something intoxicating about that campaign cover when it gets put on somebody's hat. Is the balance to that simply that presence and that supervision?
Well, I think, you know, it's just like a team of thoroughbred horses that you're driving. You know, you got to let them run a little, but you also got to keep reins on them. And
right. And
that drill instructor's hat does not give you carte blanche authority to do it your way. You do it in keeping with the standard operating procedures, and they're proven. And as I used to say to drill instructors, if you've got a cuss to get a recruit to do something, then you're lowering yourself to his level. I mean, that's not leadership. That's authoritative leadership. I believe in persuasive leadership. And I think persuasive leadership over the 242 years has probably got a hell of a lot more done than authoritative type leadership.
What's the key to persuasive leadership?
Doing the right thing at the right time for the right reason, making other people do the right thing at the right time for the right reason, and set your standards. Everyone knows it. When people that you're in charge of vary from standards, you call them to task. And sometimes it's an ass-chewing, sometimes it's just a guidance session, and sometimes it's disciplinary. And you got to judge, you know, where the problems fall, but people of just discipline, personal discipline is very important. If you can't discipline yourself, you can't discipline others, and you can't lead others. So I that's what I think. As I said, there's no one any, all our rank and everything else is secondary to the Eagle Global Anchor.
My guess.
And, think about this. The Eagle Global Anchor on our uniforms, officer and enlisted alike, is above rank, above ribbons, and above shooting badges, and any other gadgets that you wear on your chest. So the Eagle Global Anchor is above all. And as far as I'm concerned, drill instructors who violate the SOP or vary from standard are letting down those that have gone before them in 240 some odd years of our glorious history. I have no place for it. I'm concerned, and I think that's senior NCO leadership, sergeant majors and first sergeants, and colonels and lieutenant colonels and captains and majors. They got to get out, and they got to be watching.
My guest is retired Marine colonel. His name is Barney Barnum. We're talking about the current events in the Marine Corps. Another thing that's been in the news in the Department of the Navy is the collisions that the Navy has had. I finished over the weekend the reports that came out relative to both the collision of the Fitzgerald and the McCain. Have you watched that? Have you paid attention to that? Do you have any thoughts?
Well, I've read some, and I've got to tell you, again, I think it's going to prove that our training. One of the things they brought out is the cutting back on the crews, and people are working harder and not getting enough sleep. That may lend to inattention and complacency, but that's a reason, but not an excuse. And I think that again, it's leadership. It's leadership. You've got to ride them hard and put them away wet and let them know what's got to be done. And aboard ship, there's one way to do it, the right way. Because if you don't do it the right way, then people are going to get hurt and or you're not going to accomplish the mission. So lackadaisical anything. When I go aboard ship, I can tell within minutes how the discipline of that ship's going to be, just by the cleanliness, just by how the crew looks you in the eye rather than looking down at the deck, just looking at their uniforms. So I've been on ships that I'm sure that if they were in that same situation, probably had the same damn problem. So it all boils down to leadership and being firm, fair with your people, but be demanding. And, this is a tough business we're in. I mean, this is a war fighting. I mean, you got to be on edge, 24/7. And you're riding a warship. And the people that are out there know that it's a warship. So you got to be prepared to execute what it's designed to do. And if it's lackadaisical or for some reason the skipper or the XO or the trainer officer doesn't make people do things and check them off. So I don't know. I'm a little concerned about my Navy. And I think what we've read so far, I think the CNO has admitted just what I just said.
So one of the things that's interesting is I heard that the CNO testified maybe 6 weeks ago about the incidents, and a lot of the things he couldn't answer because the investigations were pending, and he said those details will come out, and I will come back and testify again. But this whole 100-hour work week, when you're deployed, that's 14 hours a day. That's 10 hours of free time. When you're at sea, If you
what the
have
hell else you're going
to
do?
You know, what? And so to me, it's like this notion that that's a lot of work. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm sure it wasn't in Vietnam. It's sunrise, to sunset, and then some, and then up in the middle of the night if you got to be that too. But when you're deployed, there's nothing else to do. And I started asking friends. I said, is that too much? And they're like, no. What else are you gonna do? Lay in the rack and watch movies? You work.
Yeah.
And so.
Well, I think that you gotta get your rest.
Right.
As I said, chow, eating chow, physical training, sleeping, and working. There's no liberty call. Where else you going to go?
It's Groundhog Day. Groundhog Day, right? That's what we call it. You're aboard ship. It's the same.
But as I said, people do have to get their sleep. I can remember going on exercises and people staying up for 24 hours. When I ran an exercise in Korea many years ago, ran it on a clock. And we started at 8 o'clock the first morning. And at 10 o'clock that night, we stopped. Everyone went to bed. And got up the next morning and started, and it was 10:01 or 22:01. And then we went another 10, 12 hours, and I stopped the clock, and everyone got sleep. And we got up, and it was more productive exercise than we stayed up for three straight days. You can't stay up for three straight days.
But they tried. And the worst offenders were the opsos. They'd have drip drooling down their chin. They'd have with coffee, and they'd be blithering idiots.
You know that? You know that? And what's it prove? I do have concerns, and I think the stuff I've read in the Navy Times, or the Marine Corps Times, whatever they call it now, it's indicated initially that what I just talked about is probably, that's going to be in the reports.
Roger.
But they said that's a reason. That's sure not a damn excuse.
No, when you
And then I understand they didn't even have the damn transponders on.
You know, well, a lot of them transit without those transponders on, but they can see everybody else. But
not in a straight like that when you've got foreign ships.
Right. No, I know, depending on the ship. And the other thing is, with the McCain, every time that I transited through the Moluccan Straits, we were at general quarters. There wasn't people in. And to think that you're going to collide with another ship, and you don't even hit the collision alarm or general quarters 60 seconds before you know it's going to happen. And if that happens, right, those guys would not have been killed in their rocks.
That's right. Well, it's tough to be a Monday morning quarterback because we weren't on the bridge. But I just, having spent as much time riding ships and being on bridges and watching the supervision and the oversight of the leadership, something was lacking. Okay? And it wasn't just Murphy being on the bridge.
Right. No, I think we all share that concern about the Navy. But I think the one thing we all feel good about is, you have the right guy in charge of the Department of Defense, the right guy in charge of as a chairman, that are gonna I think be able to address those issues, and I think return the Navy to its war fighting heritage, because it's got an incredible heritage. And,
oh yeah.
And I read a very interesting interview by a retired surface warfare captain, and he said, look, their navigation qualifications not done. Their bridge watch standard qualifications, not done. He said, but I bet you that their sexual harassment training was all done. He said, I bet you their sexual assault training was all done.
He said,
Secretary Mavis, and I don't want to bash, Secretary Mavis, maybe a little bit, but he said, you get what you put emphasis on. And if that's your emphasis, he said, look, we can see, we've had four incidents here, in the 7th Fleet. In the space of 8 months, and he said that's wrong, that's unacceptable. So interesting. Let me switch gears with you. I had somebody send me an email after the first interview you did, and they said essentially, Mac, when you introduced Colonel Barnard at one point, you said Medal of Honor, was awarded the Medal of Honor, and he corrected you. The next time you have him on, could you ask him to explain? I understand the word recipient is a better term. How, when we refer to people who win awards for valor, what is the appropriate way to address that?
No, I took exception to the word win. You don't win the medal. You go out to win ball games and trophies, and a lot of the older Medal of Honor recipients take exception to the word, using the word win. You're a recipient or an awardee, but you're not a winner. You are a winner in life because of your accomplishments, but it's semantics. I don't make a big deal. It's like people call it the Congressional Medal of Honor. Well, it's not the Congressional Medal of Honor. It's the Medal of Honor. It happens to be, if you look at the awards chart, it's the Medal of Honor. But people call it the Congressional Medal of Honor because it's approved by the Congress and awarded by the President. So it's semantic. It ain't a big deal. You know, I've never seen anybody do things that were wrong that I didn't correct them.
I had another person email me the following question, and it was, what has been the best part of being part of that group, that Medal of Honor Society?
Oh, just the ability to be with those who have experienced so much and done so much, and, you know, we're one big family. I mean, I just spent a weekend up in Ohio at the Patriots Ball with seven other recipients, and just to be with them and their families, it's just dynamite. It's just they're an elite group, and as I said, it's the biggest fraternity. I mean, it's the greatest fraternity next to the Marine Corps that I know of. And they're all warriors, and they're all grateful Americans. So just great to be with them.
Another question I got for you was from somebody who had fought in both Iraq and Afghanistan. And the question read like this. Could you ask him how they deal with surviving the most improbable events in combat? Do they wrestle with the randomness, why other guys who were with them were killed and why they weren't? The probability of surviving what they engaged in was so small, yet they survived. Is that an issue for some guys?
Well, I think we all pause and reflect on that. But I don't dwell on it because it could eat into you because, you know, you do feel bad when you lose people. I mean, right. The people that I lost who executed movements that I directed and were not successful, but if they hadn't done what they did, we might not have eventually come together. So you sort of rationalize a little bit that you have to do what needs to be done to save as many Marines and corpsmen as you can. And still, mission. I mean, the mission drives everything.
Right.
So, the mission has to drive everything. Because if you worry about, oh, I'm going to get someone hurt if they do this, you're going to be unsuccessful and probably get more people hurt. So, as I said, it's a tough business to be in, and that's the responsibility that comes with authority of command. And, so if you're going to accept command, you've got to understand that you're going to have to make the tough calls sometimes. And they're not all black and white. Most of them are in the gray areas. And those are the tough ones. And because there's no training that prepares you for that, I don't think. It's either, you know, the black or white areas.
Right.
Yeah, there's training for that because it's either against the rules and regulations and policies or it's with them. But the gray areas is where you have to Well, you have to make the decision, and I just pray to God that you make the right decision. That was, you know, everybody says, did you have fear? were you scared? Well, I says, well, anybody that's not scared when they're getting shot at is full of shit or smoking dope. But the fear is that I would make the right decisions and that my decisions would lend to mission accomplishment and get less people hurt. So that was my only, that was my biggest concern. But after the battles, yeah, you do. When I go down to the wall, you know the hardest thing for me at the wall?
No.
Is looking at it. The sun is right and seeing my reflection. And I have my finger on Joe Murphy's name or Captain Gormley's name, Paul Gormley. And why them and not me? I mean, you can't help but not think about that. But you can't dwell on it or it'll drive you in the ground like a ten snake. You can't do that.
I want to switch gears with you now. Did you watch the Ken Burns series, The Vietnam War?
I watched the first two and was very disappointed. And I have talked to others who have watched it all, and it wasn't a documentary. It was a special. It didn't document the Vietnam War as it was planned and executed and fought. I was disappointed in the people that were interviewed. It was all negative. And not too many hard-charging warriors. I understand from what I've read portions of it, you know, the protesters and being the baby killers and the Jane Fonda portions of it. Yeah, those things happened, but that wasn't the meat of the thing. And I was disappointed that they didn't interview more warriors that believed in why we were there. We want to help a country that asked for our help to try to stop the domino theory of communism, stop communism there. And just think of this. The Tet Offensive, and they didn't even mention John Ripley at the bridge. Give me a break. So I'm disappointed in the way it was, from what I saw, the two that I saw, and then I was traveling, so I didn't get to see the others. But in the meantime, I've since talked to a lot of guys who watched it all, and I've read their responses, guys that I fought with and think very highly of, and I concur with what they their analysis of it. So I just thought there was too much negativism rather than the positive aspects. We might have got our nose bloody a few times, but we never lost a battle, and we weren't baby killers. Did we have a couple instances when people screwed up? Sure. And they
I would tell you, sir, that, and this is just me, they didn't make a big deal about Milai, which surprised me. I thought, you know, that it would occupy a more prominent place there. Ted, obviously.
So that was the biggest lack of leadership, Callie. That was deplorable. And the whole world knew that was deplorable. But that was an incident.
Roger.
You know, one of millions of conflict, firefights and battles that went on over there. And the highlight, I don't know. I just, as I said, typical Hollywood and sensationalism. That's enough said.
Do you mind if we talk about Milai? Because I watched a bunch of
I don't know. All I know is that it happened, and I never followed it, never read much about it. I guess I heard much about it afterwards, but I guess I was too busy doing other things.
I was talking to one of the company commanders at Quezon, and in the course of the conversation, he said to me, "Mac, do you know much about Milai?" And I thought. I said, well, I know the kind of the basics. And then after we got done, have you ever had a moment where you look at yourself and you're like, I don't really know that much about that, and kind of embarrassing. I should know something. I should know more about it. So I started reading and watching interviews about it, and I got to tell you, I was completely blown away. My assumption was that these guys had been in country for a long time. And they had been bloodied a lot. And then when I heard that they weren't, I thought, how does this happen?
I think the only thing I remember about it is the trial.
Right.
you know, I remember hearing all that, and it just pissing me off.
You know, and so what I did was I should have called you, but I didn't. I started interviewing Marines, and I said, well, tell me about your leadership experience. Was Vietnam so different? I mean, it was unique in and of itself, like every war is unique. But I mean, what we see a lot of the Vietnam narrative is that civilians were killed on a regular basis. And it seems like the narrative is most of the time deliberately, drugs were plentiful, and rape was just a thing that got shrugged off. And so
I got to tell you, I was up north,
right.
And I've got to tell you, there wasn't a big drug problem at all. I remember a few times guys coming back from R&R and I could smell marijuana. So I remember getting together one day and I said, okay. I smell marijuana in the cell. Okay, first of all, it's illegal. Number two, we're artillerymen. You can't be on marijuana and get in the gun pit and level the bubbles and screw it up, and a round's going to go in the wrong place. So here's a can be outside my hooch. I want to see all the marijuana in the morning. Well, there was nothing in there in the morning. Got them all together again. So now I got to, you know, read my lips. And the next night, there wasn't any. So the next day, fall in, collected every cigarette on the firebase. Burned them all, except those were in cartons, and I put people's names on them, and they went in the gunny suits, and put the smoking lamp was out. No smoking. And I'll never forget, about 6 weeks into that, J.D. McDonald from Arkansas came up to me and says, Skipper, I sure wish you'd lift this smoking ban. He says, I feel so guilty sneaking cigarettes on you. But anyway, finally I did lift the smoker lamp. But I want to tell you, there was no more marijuana come on my firebase.
Well, you know, it was interesting. Every Marine, and again, Vietnam, very different depending on what year you were and where you were located.
Yeah.
You know, when you say up north, one of the things I did learn watching the documentary, I didn't know that much about Con Tien. Holy smokes. Wow, I mean, I started reading about that afterwards. What a fight! What a brawl up there, you know, just south of the DMZ. But every Marine that came on, officer enlisted, said, you know, and one of the things that surprised me was that they were anxious to talk about me a lot. I thought I'd rather not. Every one of them said, yes. And General Lynch came back on to talk mm-hmm. about it. Carl Marlanis came back on and talked about it. And all these guys said, look, you know, I asked Marlanis about the rape thing. He said, how could you rape somebody? You're on patrol. You're trying not to get killed. I mean, how could you even think about that? He said, so I've never understood that, and it was never a part of what we did. He said, most of my contact, though, happened to be against the NVA. He said, in terms of killing civilians, he said, no, we didn't do that. We didn't. The civilians we ran into most of the time were scared out of their minds and were trying to get away from not only us, but the NVA, and trying to steer clear of the VC. And he said, yeah. So this narrative, this false narrative about Vietnam, he said, is one of the things that really, I think, among we Vietnam veterans, is really one of the things that bothers us, because, you know, we've all been painted with that Cali brush. And he said, it's wrong. It was an anomaly. And there might have been those incidents, very seldom, like there are in all wars, where you have weak leadership. But our Marines were no different than Marines of any other generation. When they're go ahead.
I tell you, back in some of those movies that came out, I went to a couple of them. I walked out. I mean, there wasn't anybody on my fire bases wearing bandanas and the language. I'm not a prude, but I tell you, there's no need for F this, F that, F this, F that. And it wasn't on my firebase. I just disrespect officers and flagging. I don't want to talk about another service, but it wasn't Marine Corps. And a lot of that was guys in the rear with the gear who were bored, had nothing to do, and I'm sure there was a lot of drugs but those of us up north in I Corps were at war.
24/7. I mean, there wasn't much slack time. So I guess guys went on R&R. My fire base was a good example. Guys, what they thought they learned real quick. They wanted to get away with it on my fire base. And I think my battalion in the rear, I know my first sergeant, but I'll tell you right now, he ran a tough ship back there while we were in the field. So, things do happen, you know. Again, it boils down to leadership. It's all leadership. I mean, all those problems can boil down. If you let them get away, like let a kid put the hand in a cookie jar and you don't grab a hold of them, they're going to continue to put their hand in a cookie jar. Same with haircuts. Hell, I was the barber, me and the gunny on the fire base, and boy, everyone started cutting their own hair within their gun pit because they didn't want me or the gunny to cut it. You know, Haichi, flat jackets, helmets, stand two at 1700 at night before night. You know, I had Jack Kelly, God rest his soul, had a company, Firebase Cunningham, and he had me over one night and then he says, oh, we gotta go. Why is that? He said, well, stand two, it's 1700. Put your flat jacket and helmet on, come with me. And he walked around and checked everybody and asked them questions and had their gear. So I went back to told the gunny. I said, we're going to have stand two in the battery area. And so the first night, I'm going to tell you, we had stand two. We had guys that couldn't find their flak jacket, couldn't find their helmet, couldn't find their rifle. Well, after about four nights of stand two, everyone squared away and everything else. 7 days later, we got hit by a sapper attack. My troops never pissed a moan about stand two again.
You know, there's those universal axioms in the Marine Corps, and one of them is expect what you inspect. And I remember getting called into Lieutenant Colonel Bob Neller's office when I was one of his company commanders, and he looked at me and goes, why are your maintenance numbers so high? And I said, because I inspect every Friday. And he looked at me, he said, what do you do? He said, because I want the other guys, the other company commanders to do what you do. Mm-hmm. I said, well, I inspect something out of their weekly, daily, or monthly PM. And they know what they're supposed to have done. And I also, it's a light armored, you know, infantry unit. So I said, the scouts, the Marines, it's their 782 gear that gets laid out. Rifle inspection. If you, and I start inspection at 9 o'clock, it's normally done by noon. I secure the company at 1300. If you fail, the first sergeant reinspects with me in overwatch at 1700. And trust me, you don't want to be there. And he looked at me and he said, that's it. And I said, that's it, sir. It's not that hard, but I inspect. I get under the vehicles. I get in the vehicles. I look at stuff. I look at batteries. And they know that. And you know what? Marines are easy. They'll do it. But you just got to be, you know, you got to be consistent, like raising children. And you got to get off your ass, and you got to inspect. And if you'll inspect, they'll give you anything you want. And he looked at me and goes, he said, quit lecturing me. He said, that's it? He said, you got to be kidding me. He said, all right, get out of here right now. I agree with you. I mean, and thank God. I mean, could you imagine if you would have said, I remember hearing General Zinni tell a story about, he flew in to be a company commander with a lieutenant. And the lieutenant went down to a platoon that happened to be in his company, meets the platoon sergeant, says, I want to look at rifles tomorrow. And the platoon sergeant said, lieutenant, you know, this is Vietnam. We clean our own. This is not boot camp. And he says, I still want to look at them. He said, so he made sure he was in the area of the inspection when he did it. And he said, after the third rifle, he looked at the platoon sergeant and he said, I thought you told me that they kept them clean here. And the platoon sergeant said, I didn't know it was going to be some kind of boot camp inspection. And the lieutenant looked at him and said, you get these things clean. I'll be back in 3 hours and we'll do this again. And he said, you know, he was not prior enlisted. You know, he had uncommon leadership capability because a lot of guys back down when they hear the word combat. Things we know to be tried and true, you know, somehow would get left by the wayside. Had you done that as a battery commander, I mean, God only knows what would have happened tonight when this happened.
You know what? The biggest killer on the battlefield is complacency.
Right.
And I've always said they're not supposed to do things. But if you don't demand them and make them do it, they're not going to do it. They're kids. They're young. You know, they're youngsters. And it doesn't take long before they'll know what's expected of them, because and if your leadership is good and you watch out for your troops, then they don't want to let you down. You know, it takes a while to get to that level, but when your troops say, "No, we better not do that because the old man's gonna be disappointed."
Right.
No,
that's when you've arrived, yes, sir. When you hear them call you the old man, or you've proven to them that if we all took off our rank, I'd still be in charge of this thing. And that's really, I think, that's the proof of a leader.
Yeah, yeah. So I think when a lot of young officers will say, you know, when I get into a new unit, what should I do? I says the right things. Get in there and rifles inspections. Hygiene, you know, the things that Marines, General Chapman used to say, there's things Marines should be doing and things Marines should not be doing. And so you got to make sure they're doing what they should be doing. Simple as that. That's leadership.
I want to ask you a question about hazing. A lot of discussion in the Marine Corps about hazing. And I think that things... whether you call them rites of initiation, which I tended to enjoy, can all of a sudden become hazing when you're doing the shellback ceremony. There's a difference between crawling through the garbage and being forced to eat it. Your thoughts on hazing in the Marine Corps?
Well, yeah, you know, I'm a chef. I crossed the equator, so I've been through that. I've been to in the old days many chiefs. Navy chiefs initiations. But the only thing, with hazing or initiations or carrying on traditions is there's a line you can't cross. And there's gotta be someone that's got the moxie to say to everybody, okay, that's it. That's the end of it. Because you're into the point of someone's gonna get hurt or, demeaning. And it loses the purpose. And that's the same way as, fraternities that, it starts out doing this and that and they've done it for 100 years in the fraternity house, but then they all get drunk and then they push it too far over the edge and someone gets hurt or killed. So the whole thing is, I believe in traditions. There's gotta be someone standing back watching it all, knowing that there's a time to say, okay, that's it. Stop. Yeah, we've had our traditions. You can say that you've crossed the rites of passage, and I had nothing against people tacking on chevrons and stuff.
Right.
But let it stop there. And again, leadership.
Is hazing a problem or a symptom of a problem? So were you?
I would say, well, first of all, hazing, there's no place for hazing. I know that, they told me about hazing, when he was, going to be a Lance Corporal, and then the Corporals. And I'm sure there's some of that going on in units. I don't know. Someone's just got to be watching it to make sure it doesn't get out of hand. Hazing can't be demeaning. If you got to have a rites of passage to break into the staff and CO mess or something, I don't know. I haven't given it much thought, but the only thing is, some units do certain things one way and a certain way another, but the whole thing is it can't be demeaning and it cannot injured in any way or be detrimental to mission accomplishment.
My guest for a few more minutes is
retired Marine Corps colonel. He's an artilleryman. He is the recipient of the Medal of Honor and certainly a proud Marine. I have an interesting question that I've asked, and I'll ask you. In your opinion, sir, give me, when you think of the greatest leaders in the Marine Corps, who comes to mind? Only one person. When you talk about great leaders, who comes to mind? And in terms of the combat history of the Marine Corps, in your opinion, the finest combat moment of the Marine Corps?
Oh, that's, well, I would imagine it's during the island campaigns of World War II. Probably Howland Mad Smith's, it's hard to say, because this all depends on how much of you've read or people have talked about. You know, I was aide to General Lew Walt through Navy Crosses, Tarawa, worked with General Ray Davis as a division commander after he earned his Medal of Honor. And of course, being commanded by Colonel Bob Barrow. It's just hard to say. And, I'm glad you said in combat rather than leaders because of, you know, there's so many people. You don't have to be a great general officer and a great leader to be in combat. I mean, you know, preparing to go and training and running the corps and doing that stuff. But I've read General Turnage. I got to know General Turnage well, and how much everybody respected him as a leader in combat, and General Walt. And it's tough to say. That's a tough one. I'm going to tell you, that's a tough one.
Come on, this is a tough program. These are just opinion questions. How about a finest combat moment in Marine Corps history? I would tell you, my opinion, and the way I answered it, the greatest Marine leader that I've ever seen. And I caveat that with that I've ever seen is Tony Zinni. I think he was just an incredible Marine leader. And then when he's done, you know, he continues that leadership for the nation, as a special envoy to the Middle East. And then I would even say that even his descent, I would say in particular, his descent relative to the war in Iraq. To me, that's an example of a leader that you know, stands up and is accountable to his country. And, so that was my answer. And then finest moment, there's so many you could name, but, if I were to pick one, I would say, the Chosin Reservoir. And, first of all, the fight of the 5th and 7th Marines to get back to the division. And unbelievable.
That battle, I would say, probably Bill Barber and Hector Camporetta.
Oh, unbelievable. You read it, and it's like, this can't be. This is fiction. Oh, yeah. Somebody's making this up.
Yeah. That battle, Fox Hill, I'll tell you, that was unbelievable. But we thank God in our glorious Corps we had so many great leaders. And of course, I knew Tony Zinni back when we were captains. He was a captain. I was a major at Camp Lejeune, and I never got to serve with him in combat, but sure follows his exploits and what he has done. No, you're right. He's just a Marine's Marine.
The Marine's
and,
Marine.
Served with and was the military secretary to General Al Gray. So, you know, I believe in the way things that he has done for our Corps.
Right. Wow.
And, when you start talking about commandants, if you look back over the histories, we seem to have the right guy for the right time. It just sort of happens. And, of course, I'm a Bob Nella fan. Bob was an Iron Major working for me when I was Colonel at SPD.
Really?
So, yep.
He was an SPC. He was a tactics instructor at the basic school when I was a lieutenant. He was my battalion commander as a company commander, and then and we've remained friends, and we've served together in Iraq. And I want to ask you a question, and this is another email I got. The period in the 70s, and you can help me with this and clarify this. Who was the commandant that said, "I don't care if there's only me and my driver left when this is done"?
General Barrow.
That was General Barrow.
General Barrow says, we'll go down to four Marines. Me, my driver, the sergeant major, and I don't know who else, but anyways. And I was in the 2nd Division, and we were putting 20 and 30 guys out a day. I was the staff secretary. And General Joslin and Sam Jaskoka had the division at the time. And Colonel Jim Marsh and Cal Colleen were the chiefs of staff. And I know we put them on because every one of those books went across my desk. But General Barrow said, no, we'll go down to fire team.
And what's the criteria? Could you paint a picture? Was it drugs? Was it racism?
No, it was drugs and racial. And when you have drugs and racial, then you have disrespect for authority. It was Camp Lejeune. I was there, let's see, 72, 3, 4, 5, in that time frame.
Right.
And I got to tell you, I was always out. I was a battalion 3, XO, and then acting CO of 210. I would check the barracks 3 or 4 times a week. When I checked the barracks, I had a baseball bat in one hand and my black Labrador on the leash in the other. I didn't have any trouble. I remember one Friday afternoon there at the Swoop Circle.
Wow.
That there was such a racial clash that the fire trucks had to come with fire hoses and break it up. I mean, can you imagine that? Does that make you sick as a Marine?
Mm.
To see other Marines doing that?
It's hard to imagine, to be honest with you.
It was just unbelievable. But I want to tell you, General Barrow cleaned up our corps.
Not a surprise to you, though. You had seen you.
Not at all. Not at all.
No, I think I've related this to you before, but General Lynch, when I had him on, talked to me about LZ Margo when they took the battalion into this. And I don't know if it was part of Dewey Canyon or not, but he said
No, it wasn't.
It had been registered by NVA artillery. Unbeknownst to us, we go in there, and once we got in there, they hammered us. And he said we had 160-something casualties that day. And we just started medevacing guys out. And he said, and then late in the day, here comes a Huey, and off jumps Colonel Barrow. What do you need for
him? Yeah.
And when
it was during, I don't know what the time frame was, but I don't recall that name.
Well, he said, and he got
him. Who was General Lynch with at that time, you know?
I can't remember.
The battalion?
I can't remember what
Ninth Marines?
I believe it was Ninth Marines.
Well, it would have been if General Barrow got on.
Yep. And then, but he got emotional when he talked about, you know, here this guy gets out. And he said, Mac, I have to tell you, he said, these were iron men. They were not afraid. You know, and he wanted to know what he could do to help me. And I told him, sir, we're getting our final guys out of here and then we'll be ready to go. And he looked at me, he said, they're going to pay for this, just so you know. We're going to go get them. And then he said, the following morning, another Huey comes in. It was General Davis. And he said, he went down to meet him. The helicopter, you know, landed on a road and then took off. And Davis is walking up, and he says, General, I don't think it's safe for you to be here. And he said, General Davis looked at him and he said, son, this is my AO. I'll go wherever the hell I want to.
Yeah. Well, that's General Davis.
And he said it was just such an intoxicating experience being around men like that who, they bloodied our nose, you know, but we're going to get them. We're going to go get them,
yep.
And it's going to start right now. And he said it was just the most incredible experience.
Oh,
So I want to ask you, when I saw you on TV at the White House recently.
Yep.
And as a recipient of the Medal of Honor, do you get invited to all those ceremonies?
Yes, of course. I'm local.
Okay.
And I live in Northern Virginia, so I'm easy to get to. Yeah, I go to the White House for Medal of Honor ceremonies. I didn't go during the Obama administration. I went to a couple, but I felt unease. But anyway, no, it's quite an honor to be there. So I've been to the last two or three from Trump.
I
got to tell you, the latest two are Army medics from
right.
Vietnam.
Right.
And I want to tell you, their stories are absolutely phenomenal, and they're just great guys.
Really?
Just guys, yeah. So I'm glad that they got upgraded.
Is that what it was for all these years? That's one of the things I didn't understand. Where were these stories all these years? Are they in somebody's desk?
The latest award was a classified mission.
Okay.
But it's finally been unclassified and it broke it loose. And then the others are, paperwork gets lost. And a guy gets the last two, both of them are under the review. Remember where Congress, we reviewed, and there's been a number of upgrades, and both of them were included in those upgrades, yeah.
Got it.
But there's a lot of reasons, and some of the paperwork gets lost, or everyone's unit thinks that this guy is going to get the Medal of Honor, but he was wounded and evacuated. Then they were wounded and evacuated. And then, of course, other people got wounded and evacuated. Who was around to give statements? You know? I mean, things like that happen. And so there's a lot of guys, but I'm sure there's a number that should have received awards who didn't, only because they were never put in for it, because in the fog of war, the people who would have been writing all the statements or recommending were either wounded or killed. So that's a sad state. But now,
final question. I'll let you go, sir. And first of all, our guest is retired Marine Colonel Barney Barnum. He's an artilleryman by trade. If you want, I would just, for everybody listening to this, go into the All Marine Radio archives and listen to the first interview where Colonel Barnum talks about going to Vietnam to get a little bit of experience as a first lieutenant, if I'm not mistaken, and then the actions that led to him becoming a recipient of the Medal of Honor. And then it's very humorous the discussion he has with General Walt about going. What General Walt said that you stick with me for a year and I'll let you go anywhere you want to go, and could you relay that story one more time, sir?
I was the aide to General Lew Walt when he was Deputy Chief of Staff of Manpower, and he said, "Barnum, if you can last a year with me as an aide, you can go any place you want in the Marine Corps." But he says, "Aides don't last a year with me." Well, then he became Assistant Commandant, and I moved down to front office with him. And 12 months go by, and I go in at 13 months, and I say, "General, time for orders, I says, "You said if I could go any place I want if I don't last it 12 months, and I spend 13 months." He says, "All right, where do you want to go?" I said, "I want to go back to Vietnam." "You can't go to Vietnam. You have the Medal of Honor." I said, "General, you said if I lasted 12 months and I lasted 13 that you would, and we had a long discussion. He did what generals do, and they lived up to their word. And I went back, and I became a battery commander of Echo Battery, 2nd Battalion, 12th Marines.
I love
same battery I was a forward observer in the first time.
Oh, well, I didn't know that. I love that story.
Oh, yeah. Yep, same battery.
I love that story. So first of all, I want to thank you for taking time out of your day and doing this. I know that you have a pretty hefty schedule traveling and whatnot, thank you very much for doing this. Always appreciate.
Well, you caught me home. And for the Marines on board, I want to extend my best wishes and
on our as we celebrate the founding of our glorious corps 242 years ago. So happy birthday, Marines, and God bless you and God bless America.
That is Colonel Barney Barnum. More of All Marine Radio coming up next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it. This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world-famous Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with a serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, battlemug.com.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the SOF community should be aware of.
The Global SOF Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marine.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner, proven and dependable.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, Visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
+9:16 on a Monday. A special Monday today. Joining me is Michael Musselman, a special guy. What's going on, bro? What are you doing? How's life?
Good. What's so special about today?
Patrick comes home after being gone for about 6 months.
That is a special day.
Yeah, it's kind of actually. I was messaging him, and they were headed to the airfield at the airport they're leaving out of, and he said, "Is coming home always this fun?" I said, "Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? It's the best. It's the best." So the day you go home, give me a good story about coming home.
The day you go home is the getting home is the stupid part, man. That's where you put up with all you're like you come back, it snaps back in reality of how stupid things can be.
Yeah, but you know what? Not on leave, but when you come home, you tend to be with a larger group. And so even that is like leave when they jack with you when you're on leave.
Stupid,
but you know what? I was when we came home from Afghanistan. We went to where did we go, Mike? Kyrgyzstan? Is that where that place was?
Manas, yeah, Kyrgyzstan in Manas.
Yeah, and so they have like paintings of Genghis Khan on the walls. So you like at the Himalayan mountains, and it's a beautiful place, and
that's where Rudy got in trouble with the freaking the customs people.
Why?
And then I had to get him out of trouble.
What was he sneaking back in?
I don't remember. It was something screwed up. And of course, I had to step in and do the. These are not the droids you're looking for. That's the thing.
Come on, think about it. What was he sneaking in?
I forgot. It was something that in his bag. I can't remember.
Oh, man. Well done. Well done, my friend. So how did you, what technique did you, and these guys are just, they're in Manas. And
probably just bamboozle them with the words like, a flux capacitor for... a Mark 1692. Yeah.
I don't know, the guys that were there when we went through were all Air Force guys, and their job is they've been assigned to customs, which means they randomly select people and they go through your shit. Okay.
And yeah, they're not qualified to do it. They just go through a 30-minute class. And then they think they're customs agents.
Right. And so the art is, so you pick up your stuff, and now there was, I don't know how many hundred of us there was when the main body went back. Mike was on the Advan, so he was small group. But the art when you're in a big group is you have your stuff with you. This is the last thing you have to get through before you throw it down in a couple piles, and then you're done with it, right? The art is don't make eye contact.
Right.
Because most of the time your stuff is jammed into these bags, and it's not so much about contraband, is now they're going to dump all your shit out, and now you got to repack it all.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and then that was the same flight when me and Rudy were going home on. The flight attendant gave us a bottle of booze, and we proceeded to get drunk. Here's two senior officers that showing. Yeah, this is the way to do it. This is how you do it, boys.
Here you go, boys.
Don't follow us. Don't follow our actions.
So what were you drinking?
Oh, some Kyrgyzstan alcohol.
Oh, there you go. Yeah,
meant for
oh my god,
meant for a horse.
Yeah,
exactly. The no,
and then and that was the same time when we landed at, I think it was Travis, and Rudy and I decided to go take a shower because we thought we were going to be there a while, and then lo and behold, as we're in the shower, they're looking for us.
I heard
everybody wants to get home, and there's Rudy and I us taking a shower.
I heard about that. That's wow. And the whole plane's waiting on you. If I was them, I'd have just left. Sorry, boys. You snooze, you lose, you're out. But they came looking for you. That's because they were intimidated.
Yeah.
They were intimidated by Mike. We can't leave him. The other guy is not a problem. But we can't. Isn't he like a 4-star something or other? No, he's not. In Manus, Chris Bronzy and I went to see, we went to see a movie at like 10 in the morning. They have a theater there. And it seats about 25 people. And so Bronzy and I go, there's nobody in there except he and I. We thought we were going to go see Thor. So, you know, we'll go see Thor. So we're sitting there, and it turned out to be they showed Bridesmaids. So we're sitting in there, and we're expecting to see Thor, and the opening scene of Bridesmaids is that girl is like, she has sex with this guy, and then she's climbing over the fence to get out of his place, and the fence and the gate opens while she's on top of it. So he looks at me and goes, are we going to stay? Well, I'm like, come on, man, this is funny. He's like, all right, we laughed our ass off. And the thing about Chris Bronzy is I don't even know how to describe his laugh. It's the loudest laugh I've ever heard in my life. Mike, safe?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's like, ah! I mean, I can't even do it.
Yeah, can't even do it justice.
It almost seems fake. It's so loud.
Yeah, you'd think it's somebody who's trying to get attention. Like, who is that guy? Why does he want? And Chris is not that way. So, but anyway, it's funny. We walk out of the theater when it's over, and we're kind of talking and laughing. That was hilarious because it is Bridesmaids. If you've never seen it, pretty funny movie. So so we're walking out at what about 11:30, 12? Going to go to chow, and there's Marines that are waiting outside to come in. And as we walk out, they all like. Well, you hear guys say, "I told you it was him," because they could hear him outside the theater laughing. Rah! And the Marines thought that was pretty funny. But, yeah, your favorite give me your best coming home story. The getting drunk on the airplane?
Yeah, that one was pretty good. The other one was, I was with, I think I was with 5th Marines, and I was coming back, and boy, oh boy, I was sitting in the plane, and there was a nurse next to me, and so she gave me some sleeping pills. And then we got to Germany, and then her and I decided to go get a high one on, and then I forgot that you can't drink alcohol and sleeping pills, can't combine those two. Man, next thing I remember, I was waking up in March, Air Force Base.
About what? Yeah. About 18 hours later?
Oh, man, it was great.
Well, that was fast.
Yeah, that was a fast plane ride.
The
Here's
an interesting one. Hey, Mac, coming home is a pretty fun day. Even the miserable jackasses are in a good mood. What was the first thing you would either want to eat or the first place you'd want to go once you got home? Mike?
When I was in San Clemente, it was Sonny's.
Sonny's. What would you get there?
I think I just got lasagna.
Sonny's brings you lasagna, and you know the orange fat that comes out of good lasagna? It's like bubbling at the sides when they bring it to your. You could literally go to the hospital if you don't navigate that right. Yeah, but it's awesome. Awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Here's another email. What's the first thing you notice when you've been gone for such a long period of time?
Color. I mean, being colorblind, but, you know, you see green grass. The grass was the greatest part, man. Because, I mean, anywhere we deployed to, there was no grass.
You know what I would notice? I would notice the organization of just the organization of the country. There's signs, and the signs are right? They're not blown up and shot up and wrong. The streets are paved, and for the most part, there's no potholes in them. There's stripes on the road, right?
Yeah, there's actually rules.
Yeah, there's rules, and the infrastructure. Like, we complain about it, but when you're back and you're like, "Hey, we're getting on an on ramp. Look at the arrows. This is awesome." It's just United States. When you haven't been around that. And it's, you're just part of something different. The whole United States thing is amazing. The other thing that always, struck me is these people, our lives have been so different. And their lives hasn't been touched. I can't remember which time. I can remember coming down the 215 to the 15 inside the back way to Pendleton, and you're sitting in some white bus, and you're really happy, and you're in traffic, and these people.
Bus? I was always picked up by the van.
I know. I was not part of the special contingent. I just got in the bus with everybody else. And
I don't remember.
I don't remember bus life.
I don't remember being in a bus.
But you're sitting there and you're looking at people, and you've just been wherever you've been, Fallujah, Ramadi, Helmand, name one, pick one. And they've been just going to work and coming home, and it's just it's kind of weird, Your life has been so different from theirs, and you're just watching them live their normal American life. And that always used to strike me on the bus coming back. It's just like they barely know what we're doing over there. But you're just so happy. Mac, how about the funniest thing that ever happened coming home? Mike, there's two good ones. Drunk on a plane, sleeping pills and booze. Mike has way better stories than I do coming home.
Yeah. The funniest thing, it was just so, some of it was so funny, it's stupid. So.
Yeah, and the emailer was right. Even the miserable guys are happy,
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's happy. And so, and it is amazing that, you've been gone for so long, and all of a sudden, here's, California in our case. There's L.A. as you're flying in. There's March Air Force Base. There's I-15. What the hell? This is unbelievable. And even the concrete... when you get back to March, the marshaling area that we tended to fly out, there was USO people there every time. God bless those USO people, by the way. If you want to donate to a charity, Semper Fi Fund, USO. Mike, everywhere I think I've ever been, you get off the plane, no matter what time of night it is, somebody from the USO, hey, boys, how's she going? Need a phone?
Oh, yeah.
You want a cookie? Isn't it amazing? And out at March Air Force Base, they're always there.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody's there. That is cool.
I'm trying to think of a funny story. Leaving, the big fight when you're at March is for electricity, right? Trying to keep your cell phone charged before you get on the plane. But coming back, you're just trying to get your shit loaded as quick as possible. So you can get home. And then the other thing is, if you have a good Advon, if they meet you, they ought to have a portable armory with them, and ours did. And you turn in all your weapons, and they meet you. They don't meet you at the camp where all the dependents are coming. They meet you someplace else, and they give out room keys and all the stuff that everybody needs. And then you get back on the buses. We even, when we came home from Afghanistan, we even did rehearsal for marching on to the grinder. It was ridiculous. You have all these officers in
front. Yeah.
You have everybody in formation, and you're like, are we going to do this again? Sergeant Major's
never
there.
Part of that, yeah.
Sergeant Major, were you there when we were doing it? Or were you at Mateo? I mean, were you at Horno?
Yeah, when you guys came home, when we came home First Marines, I was sitting at Horno watching you guys walk in.
So we're doing...
Yeah, sorry for you, what a bunch of suckers.
So, I'll tell you what I won't forget, though. I don't know, as you have squads, I was in, like, they number as you're pointing forward, right? You know, they go from left to right, first, second, third. I think I was in the second or the third squad, because ultimately when we marched on the grinder, you know, then, you know, they do, you know, detail halt, left face, and we faced to the left. And I can remember a lieutenant that was standing in front of me who will remain nameless. His wife had on this blue, very short dress. And when they said fall out, she took off on a dead sprint. And she jumped into his arms. And I was like, whoa, check it out. But it's awesome, the things that you see. You know, people haven't seen babies before. You know, little kids haven't seen their dad in some cases a year. So it's an awesome day. It's an awesome day. And then everybody takes off right after that. I think within probably 30 minutes, pretty much everybody except the CO and the sergeant major are cleared out of there, but everybody else is gone. And so it's a fun day. What about you, Mike? Any fun memories?
Uh-huh.
What's that?
Yeah, just coming home. It's fun.
No. Yeah. All right. How was your Veterans Day weekend?
Oh, great.
What'd you do?
Saturday night, we went to a Veterans Day dinner. Had a good time. It was a lot of fun. Good people. Yeah, great people.
Yeah, I didn't.
Very patriotic people.
From Texas.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
We had a cabal of veterans that live on my block. And I opened my garage door yesterday, and they're standing across the street, like, talking. So I look, and I said something. I don't know what I said. So we were talking, and you know who they don't care for, which was kind of surprised me, was the senior Bush. They don't like him.
Really?
I said, why? And they said, he ran. He was Fast and Furious guy, man. He was bringing drugs in to El Toro. That's the senior Bush, man. I was like,
what?
Yeah. They were saying that was him.
I don't know. What are you talking about?
Well, do you remember the Fast and Furious where they imported, in order to pay for arms, they were doing things with crack cocaine and cocaine into that whole thing with the CIA? You know all that?
Yeah.
Yeah, they were like, they went off on it. Like, oh, that guy, rare. I was like, whoa. And like, they looked at me like, you're young, you don't even know about it. I was like, what? And they're like, yeah, you don't know, you're just a kid. He's a CIA guy, man. He ran the CIA, he was all over that stuff. And they told me this, the CO at El Toro committed suicide because of it. Like, okay, now I got it.
This sounds funky. Right?
Exactly what I said. So I've got a little bit of investigating. to do. The here's an email. Mac, any special preparations for your kid coming home? I cleaned his truck. Yep. So he'll, when he gets in it, he'll be like, this is tight. So that's, you know, so that's one thing. We'll leave some food in his truck. They're not going to get home till late tonight.
Right.
I think they fly in, you know, mid-evening, I think around 8 o'clock. By the time they get loaded and get the Pendleton, it'll be, you know, 11 o'clock, midnight, something like that. So we're not going to go. I got to get up early. So
yeah.
We'll see Patrick when he gets back. But he was actually pretty funny. He was saying, you know, he said it just seems weird to be going back home after all this time. And he said, I can't even imagine what it must have been like, you know, to be in combat for this amount of time and then come home. I said, yeah, you know, not only that, but then, you know, you deal with guys that aren't coming home with you, you know. And I think they lost three guys on their deployment to when that Osprey went in the water. And so I said, you know, if those families are there, that's always, you know, that's always a tough part, you know. And I told him, I said, I was thinking about that yesterday. And he said, what? I said, well, you know, we're all looking forward to it, right? Well, for those families, it's going to be a rough day because their sons aren't coming home. And they had circled this date on the calendar, you know, at some point that, oh, yeah, we'll all get together and whatnot. And I said, which is the, you know, a shitty part of the business. And, you know, and you almost feel guilty in a way. I'd be curious about your thoughts about this, Mike. You almost feel guilty in a way, you know, you're so happy. And then, you know, there are families that will show up and you see their, you know, you feel their loss. And I don't want to say you feel guilty in a way, or you feel bad in a way that, you know, the randomness of things that happen when you're gone.
Yeah. The celebration is not really that. It's really not that. It's,
it's tempered when you come home and you deal with that, and your heart just breaks for those people, and you know what? And the worst part is there's nothing you can do about them. There's nothing you can do for them except love them and always remember them and make sure that they know that you'll never forget them, which a lot of units have done and continue to do in terms of their impromptu memorials around Camp Pendleton and things like that, which I know are incredibly important to different families. So, and that's, you know, and that's a part of it. That's a part of it too. I just, you know, last week, was the, what would have been, Mike, the 7th anniversary of Robert Kelly losing his life in Sangin with Kilo Company 3-5. And, you know, and his mom always posts something on Facebook about how much she misses him and loves him. And, you know, it's a constant reminder if you're in this business, you know, take care of him. Take care of him because, you know, they mean the world to somebody. I mean, they might be a jackass to you, but they're somebody's little boy or somebody's little girl. And you see that stuff and just breaks your heart. The I got another question here. Mac, I heard the gunner talk about bacon a while back. Could he just go over real quick how he bakes his bacon, I believe is what he said. He bakes it in the oven. What are the details of that? What are the temperatures? How do you set up so the grease doesn't do anything crazy? How long does it take, et cetera?
Yeah, it's simple. It's just use a cookie tray that's got the rounded edges so the grease doesn't fall out, of course.
Right.
And then I use use those cookie cooling racks. They're kind of grated. Line the bottom of the pan with foil. And then put the racks in there.
Hold on. Say that again. You use what kind?
I use it's like a cookie cooling rack. You know, the grated kind.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And then I put that in the cookie pan. You know, the baking pan.
Wow.
And it's got the rounded edges so the grease doesn't fall out. And then put the bacon on there. Put in the oven at 375 for however you want it. I I mean, if you want it crispy, you want it not so crispy, it's up to you.
375?
Yeah.
And how
and
long?
Then, voila, yeah.
And so then you just eyeball it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
I could even do that. And you would recommend that? You could recommend that over frying?
Oh, yeah. Because grease doesn't splatter everywhere. You can cook half of the, you know, the bacon. You know, so it's just better that way.
What about, do you have to turn it, Mike? Or does it cook both sides? It
cooks both sides because you have the cookie sheet on.
So if you just cooked it on top of like paper towels or something like that, do you think you'd have to flip it, or could you do it the same way?
Well, if you cook it on paper towels, you're in the fire.
Okay, good call. All right, nobody's interested in the fire piece of this.
Mm-mm.
All right, did you watch Notre Dame play Miami over the weekend?
No, I didn't catch any college ball, but I know that there were some really good games.
That wasn't one of them. Notre Dame got smoked. Yes.
Auburn was a good game.
Alabama, Mississippi State was a good game. That kid's from Texas at quarterbacks for Alabama, his name's Hurts. Wow, he's a player. He's a player, and that's a pretty decent football school because that place was crazy, and the game was down to the wire, and Alabama just went down, and, man, pretty impressive. Here's another coming home question. Is it weird when you come home after being gone that long with your family? How do you describe that, Mike? You've been gone for a while.
No, it's not weird. I mean, you just pick up where you left off. I mean, it's actually pretty simple. It's just a good feeling.
Yeah, you know
great
what?
Feeling.
Yeah, when you know, one of the cool things is that you get used to living without is the smell of your, you know, your wife, your kids, like their hair, you know, just those smells of them, and then just doing nothing and hanging out with them, and that's the best. It's just you smell them again, and all these things that haven't been part of your life. You know, you smell them again. You go and you lay on your couch. You're wearing your shorts and your t-shirts, clothes you haven't seen in a year maybe or longer. And, right, your dog's running around, and it's just, it's home, and you just haven't been around it forever. And you know what? In terms of going and doing stuff, you don't have to go and do anything, man. It's just like, ooh, a refrigerator. That's awesome, right? Nice sheets on the bed. That's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
Long hot showers. Awesome. Yeah, you know, it's just, and then you get home and you're just like the happiest kid around. Hey, what's going on? Even the people you don't like in the neighborhood. Hey, buddy, what's up? Fast and Furious refers to the ATF letting thugs buy guns and take them to Mexico. Oh, sorry about that. I need to get smart on that. They were talking about it and they were not real happy the elder Bush, who's been in the news for groping women. Have you seen that, Mike?
Mm-mm.
I promise
everybody's in the news for groping women.
I'm surprised I haven't seen you, Mike Musselman.
It's a head hunt. It's a witch hunt, man. This is like ridiculous. All this shit going on.
The Washington scene, man. Hey, I don't know. I didn't even know if I want to ask you this, but I think I probably should.
Any thoughts? There's a story that's been in the news probably for about 2 weeks, and that is two SEALs killed a Green Beret in Africa. The story is now coming out that that he discovered they were stealing money out of the informant fund that they had to use, and he was strangled. Any thoughts on all that or no?
That's all speculation still, though, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's multiple source speculation, but yeah, that's why.
Yeah, until they confirm it, yeah, I'm not. That's kind of tough.
That
is weird to me that someone would do that to a fellow serviceman.
I'll tell you what, I mean, some of the stories that have come out of, some of the stories that have come out of, even just as long as we were in Iraq, some of the theft that, you know, that, you know, guys who were in charge of developmental funds and things like that attempted, just blow your mind. Well, why can't I have a piece?
Yeah, I don't.
Why can't I have a piece of this? And to think that, you know, guys that are fighting and dying, getting blown away, and you're stealing money, got to be the lower than whale shit to do stuff like that. Here's another email. I talked about this earlier today, but Gunnery Sergeant at the court-martial at Camp Lejeune, given 10 years in prison for abusing recruits, blah, 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 blah. He's an air traffic controller. Okay, so here's the email. Mac, I'd be curious to hear Mike's thoughts on your comments earlier that you heard from guys who were hats and who were grunts, that oftentimes the guys who were the hardest on recruits were guys who were in non-combat arms MOSs trying to prove something. I did say that, and I did, and I was told that by guys who were hats on the field, and that guys would try to prove something. Mike, your thoughts on that? Did you hear that? Did you ever? You were never on the drill field, but your thoughts on that?
No, I wasn't on the drill field. I don't. Again, I think that's just crazy. That I don't know what how they're getting through that, you know, the screening of that. That's just, to me, it's just ridiculous that people resort to that type of, that mentality of hazing. So.
Yeah, it was interesting to talk to Barney Barnum about hazing. And he said, look, hazing has no place in the Marine Corps. You were Marines. Why are we hazing each other?
Right.
He said, look, I've gone through the initiation rites that everybody else has. He said, hell, they were always a good time. He said, but you need adults. You need adult NCOs and adult staff NCOs. And I guess we don't have enough of them anymore. Because what I read about, he said, is just stupid. Making somebody else's life miserable? Come on. We're Marines. We don't do that.
Yeah, your life's going to be miserable as it is. So, I mean, why?
Yeah. Why do you need to get your clothes thrown off the third deck laundry every time somebody finds them in there because you're a young guy?
Right.
Because they did it to me. He's a boot. Okay, bro. All right. Here's another one. So when you're coming home, how do you guys normally come home? Is it always the same way? Do you guys go to different places when you come home from Iraq and Afghanistan? Mike, do you always come back the same way?
What do you mean? Mentally?
No. In terms of routes, flying, not in terms of your head.
Routes flying? I don't know.
Uh-oh.
I don't know. I don't pay attention to the route that we're going. I just get on the plane.
Yeah, you heard. He's drunk once. Another time, it was sleeping pills and booze. He didn't even remember where he was.
I mean, yeah, I don't remember anything. That's how you come home. But yeah, usually you go through whatever their places, you know, their, if it's through Manus or if it's through Kuwait or, you know, through Germany. Those usually never change.
Yeah. Normally they send you someplace for a few days, like Manus, and you just sleep, you watch movies, you eat, you do your laundry and stuff like that if you haven't had time to do that. And, you know, just trying to get your act together and really just kind of relax a little, decompress is what the term they use before you go home. You know, not that 4 days mm-hmm. can decompress you. They try. They try. I mean, you can't really keep people there. And, you know, a lot of units will have, will have discussions led by, the most credible Marines in the organization is, I think, the way we've learned to do it about, you know, coming back and don't get pissed at your wife because all the money that you thought was going to be in the bank account isn't there. She's had a tough time, too. Don't snap when she says she has it as hard as you do. You know, so I mean, they've tried to do that. That was always an interesting conversation if you happen to be sitting in that one with young guys. What? Exactly. Do what, Mike? Because yeah. And so that was kind of an interesting thing. But yeah, so you went someplace. I think I spent a couple of days at Al Asad once, and a couple of days in Kuwait, and then went home that way. On one, the flight attendant sang God Bless America. That jacked everybody.
Yeah, I remember a bunch of them, they would do something pretty patriotic.
Yeah, they would have cards that school kids would make. And so you'd get to your seat and there'd be some little drawing on your seat that said, thank you for your service or something like that. And then I remember probably after leaving Fallujah in 2006, but as we got ready to taxi, she starts singing God Bless America. Everybody's trying to, wipe, everybody's hand goes up to their cheek like, what?
Yeah.
What are you looking at? So it's very cool, all the different people that say welcome home to you. Like I said, the people, the USO people, wherever you stop. Like, I want to say we stopped in Germany once. We stopped in Ireland once. The Irish people are always nice.
And, oh, yeah. I forgot about Ireland.
Yeah. And then there was always a big issue. There's always a big issue. It was up to the flight commander whether you could drink beer or not when you got to Ireland. But Mike was always on his own program, so none of these rules apply to him. They just applied to the rest of us. And I was never on a flight where the CO said that you could drink beer, which was kind of bullshit in retrospect. So,
really?
Yeah.
Man, we could always drink. Every time I went to Shannon, the bar was always open.
Yeah, no, not for the general population.
Well, that sucks.
I know. But I'm not the biggest drinker, so I didn't really give a crap. But there were some.
Neither have I. I mean,
but there's some guys who, there's some guys who cared. Some guys cared, and they were not happy about it. Somebody just sent me the article about the. This is from 1994. The third probe of El Toro officer's death has begun. Marine Colonel James E. Sabo's family, under new legislation, pushes to prove that he was slain in 1991, the ruling was it was a suicide. He was the assistant chief of staff of the base, was found shot to death in his backyard just days after he was suspended for allegedly taking improper flights on base planes. His family has vowed to clear his name. Wow. Anyway, I don't know a whole lot about that, but yikes. Anyway, okay, what's on the agenda for today? Anything good? Anything fun?
No, just relaxing. Nothing really.
All right.
Right. Not much going on.
All right, man. How's Buck? Buck
weather-wise, yeah, Buck is Buck, man.
Buck sent me a nice email on Veterans Day.
Yeah, that's what he said.
Yeah, no, he's a good dude. He's a good dude. So, Buck, if you're out there, thank you very much. Even though I said it back to you in a text, but thank you very much. But yeah, no, tonight should be fun. I don't know what time he'll get back here, but always. And you know, it's a different experience now, Mike. I mean, I'm not the one deploying anymore. Like I'm the family member, and you know, just
yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, yeah. You know, all of a sudden, you know, hasn't been around, and now are coming home, and you know, get to hear life from the perspective of a lieutenant after his first deployment. So, but no, nonetheless, exciting. Colleen cleaned up the room that Patrick stays in, cleaned out the bathroom, and she's all excited. So we'll take his truck down there and, as I said, leave some food in it and see him when he gets home. But exciting day for us anyway. So, all right. All right. All right, man. Thanks for the visit.
All right, man. Tell him I said hi.
I will. No, thanks, Mike.
All right. I'll talk to her.
There you have it. The Gunner, as he's known here on All Marine Radio. Mike always had his own... He always had his own little thing he had going. Yeah. The Gunner was always never riding in the bus, always riding in a van. Where the rest of us, you were just hanging out with your friends, sitting in the back of the bus or the front of the bus, depending on, you know, who was there. And, watching the world go by. That'll do it on a Monday. You know, somebody sent me, Mac, is there any good news in the news? I'll read you kind of the last paragraph of the story. Sabo and the chief of staff at El Toro, Colonel Joseph Underwood, lost their jobs after it was alleged that they had flown base planes for golfing jaunts and other improper trips. A few weeks after Sabo's death, the Times disclosed that the man who fired them, General Wayne T. Adams, had himself used planes for travel to sign his divorce papers and meet his fiancée, and for other questionable trips, and he in turn was dismissed as head of Marines' Western air bases. Sabo's family has denied that the colonel did anything wrong, and they have speculated that he may have been killed because of information he had on drug trafficking at the base. They have gone so far as to name the person they think is responsible for the murder. The military, they claim, has tried to cover it up. Quote, there never really was an investigation the first time, and there never really was an investigation the second time. It was all pure PR, said David Sabo, the colonel's brother, a South Dakota neurologist who has led the push for a new review. He estimates his family members have spent more than $200,000 in their own investigation. I wonder if he'd come on All Marine Radio and talk about it. Have a good day. Be a good day for my family anyway. We're fired up. Patrick is our number two son. Just celebrated his 28th birthday. So it'll be good to have him home. Have a great one. This program repeats itself momentarily, so whatever you do, don't touch that dial. Barney Barnum is after we check the news. And I have to admit, there's nothing good in the news today. It's all bad. Have a great one. on a Monday. All Marine Radio. Over and out.